You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Toilet of Hell Radio Show. It's me, Joe Thrash and Kill. With me, I've got my good buddies, 365 Days of Horror, and Bredocide. How's it going, fellas?
It's going well, man. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Jordan, what's the haps be?
Doing okay. Not much going on, which is a nice change of pace from the usual insanity of life.
Yeah, that's good. I got some big news for everyone. I got a label printer, and I know that a lot of you out there might think that's not big news. That's actually pretty lame. Just you bought a piece of shit. But no, this thing changing my life right now. I can print out address labels in an instant. I can even put little images on it. So I just sent out a round of Patreon tapes. And it's never been easier, and I didn't give myself carpal tunnel scrawling out your terrible long addresses. So things are looking up on my end.
Oh man, I'm gonna miss that personal touch.
Sorry about that, man. But this next round, I'm just thinking about all the possibilities, and soon I'm gonna get myself one of those postage scales so I can print off the shipping on my label printer and never go to the post office ever again, where I am way too familiar with the people that work there.
Way. That's awesome. Well, that makes up for it. You know, it's all about efficiently getting the stuff out to the fans, the listeners. That's what you're here for. So congratulations on your label printer. Have you labeled anything else in your house? Like,
the dogs,
right? Like the dogs and like this belongs to Joe, so your wife can't touch it or something.
So I have a one of those little handheld label makers that I've had for years, and whenever I just get bored, I label things. More likely, somebody comes over and they start labeling things for me. So
toaster, fridge.
Yeah, somebody grabbed my first aid kit and decided that it would be called a pussy kit. Don't know who that was, if I'm cutting up in my hands or something, I'm not going to think twice about using it. So, you know, you failed to give me a neuroses.
Well, I lop my thumb off, but I don't want to be a pussy.
Exactly. And my buddy, he got a label printer as well. And, he's labeled every object in his house with the Spanish name for it. So he can try to teach his wife Spanish. Which I thought was a pretty good idea. I learn new words every time I go over. So, exciting stuff going on with this Toilet of Hell radio show, where we got labels and words for things. But there's also something else going on with this episode. Can somebody fill me in on the details?
Apparently, we got Nina interviewing Hammerfall.
Hammerfall. Is that a band that you guys have heard of before?
The Hammerfalls.
The Hammerfalls. Yeah. Our young lady friend Nina, she met up with the Hammerfall dudes and recorded the interview, and it's pretty great.
Nina, so, who I might want to point out if people don't know, was hit by a bus recently.
Oh.
And is still doing interviews, which means she's better than you.
So she was fucked up pretty bad by this thing, right?
Yes. I think for
it was an entire bus.
She was bedridden, but is moving about a little bit now.
So, yeah, we talk about, these true metal warriors on the show all the time, like Manowar getting pissed off because they didn't get their tray of hot deli meats and canceling an entire performance. False. Leave the hall. Nina, true metal only, conducting an interview with Hammerfall while bedridden from being hit by a whole fucking bus. Incredible stuff. I gotta admit, I tend to listen to more of the knuckle-dragging end of the genres. Are you guys Hammerfall fans?
I've been known to let the hammer fall a few times.
Yeah? How do you like...
It sounds dirty.
Yeah, how do you like hitting your hammer?
It falls pretty hard on its own. You know, when you have a big hammer like on their album covers and such, it usually just kind of goes where it goes, you know?
Swings a little to the left.
Yeah, right, right. It's a lot of about, justice calling, fist raised up high, that sort of stuff. It's all that really good stuff, you know. If you're if you got to work out, I think Hammerfall is a pretty good power metal band for working out. Whereas if you were to listen to something like Blind Guardian, they would just take you on some kind of Tolkien journey, and that's not that tough, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to be going on a journey. You want to be focused on the boring thing that you're doing repeatedly.
Yeah, right. It's not, it's about like, hammers raised, we will fight. And it's like, cool, I can rep to this. But if you put on most other power metal, usually it's like, and into the woods, the elves, they dance in the light. And it's, you know, not quite as tough.
But. And how much can Tom Bombadil really pinch press?
Right. If you wanted to go on the Smith machine, then yeah, you can listen to that kind of power metal. But if you're going to bench press on your own, then you definitely need Hammerfall.
Free weights only with Hammerfall, okay? Don't get on the nautical or whatever the fuck. Do a real workout.
Or you're on the nautical with free weights.
Like that, like the thigh machine. That's where you listen to Blind Guardian.
I look at the thigh machine with some suspect eyes because I don't know if I can actually bend my legs that way due to a lifetime of fucking up my body. So maybe I'll give it a try, but only with Blind Guardian. Yeah. Hammerfall, though. We're doing squats, we're doing deadlifts, we're doing overhead press, we're doing military press, we're doing Arnold press. We're going to press every single press there is to press. Yeah. Then we're going to get to press because we can't press no more.
Today we pressed record so you could hear about our presses.
I destroyed my back again. How's yours doing, Jordan?
It's the same amount of constant pain.
Cool. How are you holding up, Brenna?
Well, there's been a major change to my back because there's no more hair on it. Your boy chopped it off last week.
You chopped off your hairy back?
No, I chopped off the hair that was falling, you know, daintily and beautifully along my shoulders and back. It's gone. I got a haircut.
So your glorious mane is no more?
Yeah, Dragon Mane's had its final roar, and your boy's moving on into, you know, professional life. It's just, I sold out, guys. So I'm going to start taking the band photos with sunglasses and long coats and convincing everybody and myself that, yeah, I'm definitely going to play that Alice in Chains to make some seriously trendy music, but it ends up coming honky-tonk and country anyway.
I'm telling you, man, wave of the future. So do you feel like maybe you are a giant disappointment to your younger self and to all of your fans?
I feel fucking amazing. It's the best decision I ever made in my life. Everything is so much easier to do. It's so much more comfortable. It's just the fucking way of the world. And it's like, it's a cool guy haircut anyway, you know. It's like the undercut with the long swoopy hair on top, so I can still do a little emo twitch if I want to get it out of my face and still look cool and hot. So I don't care. I look badass, man. I don't give a fuck. So but yeah, man, having long hair in 2019 is just definitely not necessary. And I don't know why I did it for so long, but it's like I caught myself in the mirror and I was like, I look like fucking shit, man.
I do that all the time, but there's really nothing. This is all I have to work with, man.
Well, I mean, I do it all the time anyway, but yeah, I cut the hair, shaved a lot of the beard, and I'm just, you know, getting back into shape and eating healthy again, and I'm trying to, you know, turn things around a little bit, try and be a little bit of a better person, not just be like the crust fuck scum of the universe, you know?
That's good. I'm so lazy that I chopped off my hair, but with a one guard on my little shaver thing, and I hit the beard and the top of my head with the same one, so I'm at a consistent length all the time. And it's great for me because I just roll out of bed and do whatever I have to do. I don't have to, like, fuck with some gel or anything like that. It's done. Utilitarian.
Yeah. Buzzing it up. Matchy-matchy.
So we got label printer talk, we got hair care talk. What else do we need to get on this one?
Nothing really. I mean, that's just what people come here for.
I know.
Well, if we're talking about labels, maybe you want to bring up the thing that we brought up last week.
So, we did go into this very, very briefly before Jordan so cruelly rebuffed us. Jordan.
It was an hour into the show. It could have been an hour and a half. We don't have rules here.
I went back and listened to that episode. That was a good-ass episode.
It was. You people should be, like, grateful for how good the content is. Typically on their show.
Come on, guys. I'm in some pain here. Cut me some slack. All right. So we went into it a little bit, but go ahead and let's start this off from the top. What was it that you saw that you thought needed to be addressed?
It was just a question of, are labels necessary or needed in 2019? And this was posted on Twitter. My apologies for forgetting who said it.
I think it was Joe Schaefer.
Our friend Joseph.
Yeah. Joe Schaefer.
Hi, Joe. Invisible. And yeah, a lot of people were just like, yeah, no, you don't need labels anymore. It doesn't matter. And I kind of tilted my head at that and thought that was an interesting way of looking at things, especially coming from people who might not necessarily be in bands. I don't really agree with that. I think it's certainly possible to put out your music and do all that and have some success and do well without a label, but to say there's like no point or you don't need one, still, it's just I can't jive with that.
So let me give you my perspective on this, because Joseph's original point was, he said that people ask me all the time, like, which label is not shady, should I sign with? And I think that generally, if you're kind of in a upstart band, maybe not a whole lot going on, you don't need a label. You need to build up some clout, that word that I like saying lately, before that's even a possibility to consider.
Yes. And I mean, I think that was an angle that wasn't considered so much in this conversation, is that there's a part of your band life where you don't need a label, but then there's part of your band life where you might want one. If you're just starting out and you're just trying to figure out your sound and you're trying to get your quality down and get your look down and get your stage show down, like, at that point, obviously you wouldn't need a label. You kind of have to do the work first. You have to make sure that you really have something worth promoting. And if you kind of start to get that feeling and you want to break out, then yeah, there is, I mean, it's not as bad as it used to be, but there is a sort of way things are gate kept, in online journalism, where if you're just some rando emailing the blogs, the YouTubers, whatever, you don't look like you're as serious as you should be. Or if you try really hard to make yourself look professional, but you don't actually have the skills to do it, it becomes obvious very quickly. So, yeah. It, unfortunately, like, you guys get emails like that all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I oftentimes, I'm more apt to check out a band that emails me directly than getting a press release from a label about it, just because... Well,
that's something.
Just because, like, I want, and this is entirely about getting to a cool new band before everybody knows about them. Like, wanting to get these folks off the ground before everybody else realizes, oh, this shit's tight and I should have listened to Joe.
At the same time, we also get random messages on Facebook where people in bands don't even say anything. They just send us a link to the music.
Yeah, and I'm never going to listen to that, so try better.
Never going to listen to that. Which, so I think there's kind of one of those things where either you're just starting out or you're kind of doing things on your own. That's kind of one of the pitfalls, is maybe you don't need a label to send an email that looks nice and is polite and tells us things. But at the same point, a label or PR person might say, don't just send a random website a link to your video. Or don't tag them on Twitter, along with five or six other publications.
Oh, man, I fucking hate that. Do not do that either, where it happens all the time. I get a notification. It's like, hey, Joe Thrash and Kill, I thought you might like to check out my band. I look at that person's tweet history, and they've done that exact tweet with 40 other music journalists. I see you. Not going to listen to it.
I think a major part of it is what you're trying to accomplish as a band as well. If you really care about having eyes on your music, I think it's probably the best way to go. At least work with a PR company. There's a lot of like independent PR companies you can contact outside of labels. So that's at the very least something you want to consider. But if you're if you want to just make some scratch when you're a very low level death metal band, I don't know, man. Maybe consider a different genre completely.
there's something to be said about like kind of building up a small following that a lot of people seem to skip out entirely on. I know that when I was younger, I thought, we'll just get signed. We won't have to worry about doing all the other shit. And of course, that's never going to happen. Or if a label does approach you to sign you, they are going to completely screw you via Nocturna style.
Yeah, that's another thing we can bring up too, is that a lot of these labels are as unprofessional and sloppy and shitty and everything else I could say that's negative, more so than any lame startup band that doesn't sound very good. Like, you'll have labels make shitty emails full of typos. You'll have people who totally fucking grift you. It's definitely a thing.
Somebody sent me this the other day. Via Nocturna is now doing mystery box sets where they'll send you 100 CDs of random bands because they have such a huge back stock of bands that they've grifted that they have to get rid of their stock somehow. I don't know who's buying that mystery package, but woe be to you, buddy.
Yeah, the Via Nocturna system, as far as I've known it, goes as follows. They randomly select a brand new heavy metal band that started up on Bandcamp. They sell them this huge package of just... And when I say huge, I mean price. I don't mean it's a good deal. They sell you this package of how it's like, oh, for this much money, we will send you a box of 500 CDs that you can sell back yourself. And... we will take all of your digital rights because we're going to put it up on Bandcamp and collect that for you. And you're pretty much stuck with way too many CDs in the garage for a band that no one wants to hear or knows yet because Via Nocturna just jumped on you before anybody else did. Yeah. And yeah, that's pretty much the deal.
Because nobody else was going to, because he didn't put in the work beforehand. I saw some of the replies to Joseph's tweet. It was like Andrew from Ripped to Shreds. Was saying that he was tired of basically doing it all on himself and he wanted a label because he has he's built up a following where people want to order his shit. I remember I did one of the first premieres for Rip to Shreds and he's only become more popular since then. People can't wait to hear new Rip to Shreds material. That's what you need to do. You need to get yourself out there before you can rely on somebody else to carry the rest of the weight. If there's nothing going on, you don't need a label. If you got something going on, you might need a label. That's the decision tree path you got to follow.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody's live scene is different. But if you play around and you notice a lot of people have a lot of great things to say about you, and you put out your music and you show it to your metal buddies or whoever you connect with online, and they have great things to say about you legitimately, then... you know, you're onto something. But if you pretty much go off like a fart in church the moment you put shit out, then maybe you want to work on your material a lot more before just trying to get yourself the curated rock musician experience.
How long have you been doing your band, Jordan?
Over 10 years.
Yeah. So with this latest release, like, you had number one, great material. Number two, killer cover art. Thanks, Stephen Wilson. Number three, a monstrous PR agency that was doing a great job. And number four, you had a label. And what do you think from the results that you've seen from it so far?
Okay. Better than it would have been if we did it all on our own. 100% better. I think with a label, like just being on a label, it elevates you a certain status. You're not just any old band, at least in my eyes. You're not just one of the names in the hundreds of emails we get at some point. You've reached some sort of level of being in a band. Good or bad, you know, that's up to you to decide, but it's almost like choosing the brand soda at a restaurant over something you've never heard of that might be cooked up in the back of the room and is a little thick.
It's artisanal.
Exactly. And I think with labels also can take some of the brunt of paying for some of the things of putting out music, whether it's physical creation of a CD, a cassette, records, advertisements, whether it be online or in print magazines, having just a built-in audience. The label that I'm on right now is in Europe, and we probably would never, ever have a foothold in any countries over there just based on our location. You know, being somewhere else and having fans already and other bands on it that people like, oh, I like this band, the label put something else new, let me check that out. Whereas that's another thing that you would never reach as a band just because you already have that built-in audience.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I'm not going to tell you like there's no benefits to being on a label, but I think that you've put in the work where this makes sense now. At least that's the read that I'm getting on this, because I remember years, I think before I even like met you, you were getting your work dapped up by some of the journalists we know online.
A little bit, not much. But I think we also see points where like a label like Relapse or Prosthetic will release a band's debut album. Like, that's huge.
Yeah, and I don't know how people do that. I want that.
Yeah, that would be nice.
You know, I think it's in a lot of cases, it's they just have a demo and they just sent it and the people at the label like it. And it's just being on a label like Relapse or Prosthetic, like you suddenly have hundreds of thousands of people listening to your music that you never would have gotten if you just put it out on Bandcamp by yourself, hoping someone will listen to it and tweet about it, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have to understand, though, that is kind of a moonshot, though, to have...
Yeah, no, absolutely. It absolutely is. There's different levels of this. You know, you don't want to be on the Via Nocturna, and maybe the hope is to eventually get into one of those big things, but in the meantime, there are smaller labels, specialized labels, that might fit in well with the music that you put out. And it's not a bad thing to hook up with them. Obviously, it all depends on contracts and not giving away the rights to your music and that sort of thing, but I think it can be mutually beneficial.
Certainly. And if you know, like you were saying, specialized things, for example, if you had tried to kill your wife, you should probably check out Nuclear Blast.
And apparently you can play at the House of Blues no problem.
Cool. I thought that they had, since they were like, I know some of the locations are owned by Disney, so a couple of death metal bands had gotten stripped from their House of Blues shows, so that's pretty funny.
Machine Head got stripped from playing in Orlando.
Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. Well, good for Tim Lambesis. Great for him. He deserved it. So a lot of the things that people need help with when they're just trying to get known, let's say that you don't necessarily want to have deluxe vinyl or vinyl in general. Let's say that you want to keep it pretty DIY. I know we've discussed it on the show, but I still think hiring quality PR company to help you kind of get the word out on that thing, it will do a whole lot for you. For example, you use Earsplit on your latest, right? And Earsplit is awesome. Those guys work incredibly hard for their bands, and they do PR that maybe your built-in label couldn't or wouldn't do.
That's part of it, is that our label had their own PR that they were working with in Europe, and not the best, which is why we kind of used our own money to go with Earsplit. But another band I'm in on another label has a good working relationship with Earsplit, and they covered paying Earsplit. So it's kind of like we got both sides of how a label can help and cannot help with PR.
Yeah. Another interesting thing that I saw people bring up was that folks had a lot of success with renegotiating their contracts. When they were given an offer from a label, they didn't just sign immediately. They took a look at it and decided what would work for them and what wouldn't work for them, and then made a counter proposal of what they would like. And in a lot of cases, it was successful, and that was a great relationship for both bands, for both parties, which is something that I don't think folks think a lot about, but they definitely should. If you have something in particular in mind, I think you ought to go for it, man. It is your whole baby and all.
Yeah, just, and don't sign to Victory.
But right. Tony said he'd make me a star.
And sometimes he did. Victory was a big label 20 years ago. I guess. I don't know. Look,
I gotta make you the next Hawthorne Heights, kid.
Yeah, man. Woo. Hawthorne Heights was like played in Target. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird because it's talking about killing myself.
Flush my wrist and pluck my eyes.
Yeah, we're all gonna flush our wrists on Toilet Bowl Radio. That's how we do. I guess it's like this. I don't know. I've seen bands get signed to labels that don't get anywhere, that aren't popular, that don't sell any albums. And I've seen bands who were totally DIY do really good without labels, or make up their own label names so that blogs would take them seriously, which is also a thing that sometimes bands have to do. But I'm always going to be twisted about it because I'm working on a new project and I'm kind of brand new doing this all on my own. I was relying on other dudes from my last band to kind of navigate that. They navigated it extremely poorly, so that's one of the reasons I kind of said sayonara. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would be willing to sign something over, like a chunk of my work over, in exchange for something that might not go anywhere anyway. It's weird. There's so much out there. There's so many labels. There are so many PR companies. There's so many ways that things can go wrong. And I think at first I'd like to try to keep it DIY just so I have some control over how the beginnings go. And if I get approached by a reputable label or something, maybe, maybe not, then maybe I might go down that route. But I don't know. You got to do the work first, I suppose.
I would say most small time labels won't even have you sign a contract. It might just be an email deal. And if they do have you sign something, you're usually not signing over the rights away to any of your stuff. If anything, it's like, send us $200 so we can get this made, or split the cost with you, or pay for us to mail you 50 CDs that we make for you, which, it, you know, again, it all depends on what you want to get out of your music and what you want done. Like, you could totally put it all out on your own. It's on Bandcamp. You get it on Spotify, wherever. But it's nice to physically have something you created in your hand and you could look at, and to give to people too.
Mm-hmm. Just be wary. If anybody asks for you to pay for everything, it's probably not a great deal. if you see a number of items created, like 1,000 CDs, and you don't think you can move 100, probably not a great idea. There's the Latin thing. It's like cavit emptor. Yoinkus maloinkus, there are some unscrupulous cats out there. Got to be careful. So my take is, if you know that people like your stuff and that you buy your stuff, you're probably a hot commodity and you can make some moves. If you're not selling shit, nobody cares, nobody goes to your shows, nobody likes you, you might want to consider alternative options. Like quitting.
Yeah, like selling all your shit and being the dad you're supposed to be.
Cut your hair, get a job.
Yeah, slob. I don't know, man. It's wild out there. That's all I can say. You might get the PR on your side, you might get the label on your side, but I don't know. Like we were saying, you'll find a lot of guys who we'll just take the money and they don't care about the quality, and they'll throw you in their chain email, and what you get is what you get. And then they go off on Twitter about how you can't blame them when your music sucks. And it's like, dude, if the music sucks, why would you try to PR it? I don't know.
And a thing you can always do is if you are selling some things and people seem to like some of it, you can always hold on to everything yourself and get yourself a label printer, because you're going to need it. I'm all prepared to start, you know, well, except for everything but, you know, musical ability. I'm all prepared to start my own band because I got this fucking label printer here, man. I am ready to go.
Thrash and Kill Enterprises, LLC.
Vanderbilt. Fuck, what is it? You know what? I'm going to cut this because I can't remember the fucking bit. What do you say we...
Vandalay Industries?
Vandalay Industries. God damn it. I suck. What do you say, perhaps, instead of us yakking, that you hear from a musician that you might want to hear from, and another musician interviewing him, and it's a lot better than what we do?
Yes?
Yeah, I think that sounds pretty good. Change the channel, sir.
All right. And now, Hammerfall.
So, hello, everybody. My name is Nina. I'm from A Sound of Thunder and the Toilet of Hell, and I am here interviewing Oscar from Hammerfall. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. So, are you in Sweden right now?
Yes. Yeah, I'm at home.
Awesome. Awesome. What's the weather like over there?
Cloudy. Today, cloudy and windy. Pretty warm, but not by your standard. Well, it depends on where you are, actually.
I'm actually in DC. We have a big old heat wave right now.
Yeah, I heard about that. it's incredible. I think we get some heat towards the weekend, unusual heat towards the weekend, but by then I'll be in Siberia, so I won't be able to feel it.
It feels like we kind of traded with Spain for a minute there.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, but first I have to tell you, I'm a huge Hammerfall fan, like just one of the biggest Hammerfall nerds in history. And the reason is because when I was in college, World of Warcraft just came out.
Oh, wow. And
I saw an album called Hammerfall, and I told my boyfriend, oh, that's a town in Warcraft, I have to buy it. And of course I fell in love. So one of my first questions for you is actually, what is the Warcraft connection? Because I have been playing this game since it was released, and I have seen so many Hammerfall references throughout this game. So I have to know, is there a connection, or are they just huge fans?
No, there's a connection, actually. Not from the very beginning, but we got a mail. This was, I believe, early 2002, something like that. And we were just getting ready to record the Crimson Thunder album.
Yes.
And a guy called Sam mailed us and said, well, I'm a fan of you guys. I've listened to you when I create my artwork. I work for Blizzard Entertainment, and this is what I create when I'm listening to you guys. And they sent us some examples, and we were like, wow, he's incredibly good. Let's ask him if he wants to do the album cover for the next album. And he was ecstatic, being a fan and all. And so he created, since then, he's been involved in one way or another on every Hammerfall release that we've had since then. So yes, there is a connection. I think he put the town Hammerfall in there just because he could, I guess, and because it was such a remote thing, and nobody would, it didn't matter really, you know, it had no bearing on the actual game, which is a fun thing.
That is so funny, because to me it really meant a lot, because I'm a role player, so my character is from Hammerfall. So when I saw that there was a band called Hammerfall, that meant a lot to me. So how funny. I love it. That's a great, great connection. You guys have like this great connection to your fans. And I love seeing it when you have that connection and they go out into the world and they like spread the word like that. It's crazy how you can do fans through things like that, right?
Yeah, I've never heard that. I mean, a lot of people asked us when they play the game, oh, wow, is it from you guys or what? But I've never heard anybody looking up the band from seeing the name of the town. That's pretty fun.
yep, that is exactly why I did it. So speaking of fans, I assume you guys have a lot of fans in the curling community after that music video. How did that music video with the Swedish curling team come about?
So the women's team.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were really good. I mean, they were already European champions. And there was an article or like in one of the Swedish newspapers that said something like curling is not very rock and roll or something like that.
And they took
offense to that. So they said, we're going to prove to this, you know, this guy that we definitely can rock and rock and roll as good as anybody else. So they contacted, I believe, our booker or the company rather than we have this idea about a video. Do you have a band that we could do this with? And they knew that we were sports fans. So we were like, okay, this is incredible. We want to do this. Sure. Of course. No problem. This is going to be fun. So that's how we came about. You know, they asked for a band and somebody recommended Hammerfall and we were up for it. That's basically how we came about.
That is great.
Yeah, it was a huge thing for us, especially since they went on to win the Olympic gold medal at that, because this was for the Olympics in 2006.
Yeah.
And they used it the same song for themselves and the same team in 2010, which they also won. So, you know, it's pretty, for us, I mean, that's the closest thing you will ever get to an Olympic medal, I think, you know.
That is beautiful.
So, it was really cool, and they were such good sports. I mean, this we had nothing to do with this video. They hired people to direct it and write the scripts and everything. We were just there, you know, goofing around basically and playing a little bit. That's all we did, because this was Hearts on Fire. Obviously, the song we already did a video for that 4 years earlier.
Right.
So there was no point in us. Yeah, this was just a fun thing for us because we love sports. That's basically
what
it was.
That is so fun. I love that. Hearts on Fire is honestly one of the first Hammerfall songs my band ever tried to cover. So I have that is a very important song to me. I love it. So seeing you guys, the curling team, that made me so happy because I actually, it's one of the few Olympic sports that me and my husband actually like to watch.
Okay.
So I loved seeing you guys with the curling team. It's because it's different, you know, it's not the football team or the basketball team. That's great.
No, it's very different. And I've never actually played a game, but we, of course, when we recorded the video, we got to fool around a little bit with the big things, whatever you call those.
Yes,
the stones. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I will bet you a lot of money on whoever tries this, whoever doesn't match this, the first time you're going to hit the wall behind. Every time. It's really difficult. You have to do be really careful with that one, because it glides so far on the ice and so well on the ice that it's you always do it too hard. Always.
Yeah, that looks like the kind of sport that you could easily mess up your first time. Definitely.
Yeah.
Especially slipping on the ice.
Yeah, that happened too.
Awesome. All right. Well, I've been listening to your new album before I called you, and you've got some great songs in here, and I'm seeing a lot of I don't know, it feels a little bit like you're protesting against something, like you're testifying, Stars of a Generation, Dead by Dawn, and Yet I Smile. I'm seeing like you're fighting something. So I was wondering, what inspired this album?
Well, I think you can, you will get a different answer from each of the songs. I think, you know, all of them are different, and I don't think any, there's no red thread going through them.
Sure.
It's just, you can obviously, it's like when you interpret an old poem from the 1800s or whatever, you can make it into something now, you know, you make some connections that weren't actually there when you wrote it. I don't think we just tried to make the best 10 songs that we definitely could do. That's all it was.
Okay. So do you write songs on a daily basis, or do you have maybe some kind of a songwriting process? Is there a songwriting process that includes the entire band, or do you usually start things on your own?
No, we had the same kind of process, more or less the same anyway, since since day one, basically. Okay. So generally, not for all of the songs, but for most of them, I start writing the music, the instruments. I do maybe some of the vocal lines, if I have some, like, yeah, a good chorus or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then I make a demo out of this, send it off to Joachim, and he puts on the rest, the lyrics and the rest of the vocal melodies. And that's how we work. So there's never been any democratic process or anything like that. I mean, Pontus is involved. Pontus is involved on some of the songs on every album. This time was only one, I believe.
Okay.
Last time was two, or, you know, it's a little bit here and there. Gotcha. So he's also involved, but generally that's how we do it. And I usually also come up with a song title, like a title I think is cool, that fits the band and that fits the song. And when I send it off to Joachim, I usually have, all the song titles that I come up with come from somewhere, you know, whatever, it's a movie or a book or just a cool thing or a word or whatever it is. They come from somewhere, but I never tell him where they come from. He just makes, you know, he makes everything up on his own. The way what he feels when he hears the music and when he sees the song title for the friend, and that's how he creates his own stories.
Okay.
There was one exception on this album though, which was "And Yet I Smile," because I took that one from The Walking Dead, the TV series, and I don't think he has watched it, but it was also. I felt it needed some explanation, basically. Gotcha. So I told him what I was thinking with that one. And then he, again, created his own story with it.
Well, that's very cool. Okay, so that leads me to a question. The song Unbent, Unbound, Unbroken, is that from Game of Thrones?
Yeah, from A Song of Ice and Fire, yes.
I knew it. I knew it. When I was reading the book, I saw that and I was like, wait a minute. This book definitely came out before that album. So,
yeah, sure. The book did for sure. I started reading the books during the recordings of Crimson Thunder, which was 3 years earlier. It was we recorded most of that album in on Tenerife together with in the studio of the singer of Helloween, Andy Darius. He wasn't involved in the actual recording. We had a producer, but it was his studio. And he recommended this. I don't know if I finished my book or if I forgot to bring another one or whatever happened. I didn't have anything to read. And he told me, you know, I think you would like this. And I don't know, 20 pages in, I was hooked instantly for the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
It's incredible. Since then, I've read everything that he's written.
Okay.
I think every book I've ever seen with him, I bought and read. So
very cool. So also Take the Black, that was also a Song of Ice and Fire reference. I knew it. Yes,
absolutely. Same thing with Dark Wings, Dark Words on Threshold.
Oh my gosh. I feel so vindicated now because I keep reading these. Like, I know this has to be
reference. Too much to be a coincidence, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's so fun. I love that. And I love you guys' process because it's almost exactly like our process. So that makes me happy.
Okay, cool.
That is great. Okay, so what is your favorite part about being in Hammerfall? Like, what is the thing that makes you do it every day?
I think because I founded the band 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was always based on my vision for a heavy metal band. And when Joachim came into the band 3 years later, I discovered that we have more or less the same vision. You know, that we have the same ideas of what the perfect heavy metal band is, and I think that also allows me to create music the music I want. And I think that's my favorite thing of all to being in Hammerfall. I have no creative restraints, and I get to do the music that I love more than anything else. So that's what it is.
Great. I love it. Okay, so that's your favorite thing. What is your least favorite thing? Like, what is the one thing that you wish you could change?
It would be nice to never have to record a music video again.
Really? You don't enjoy the videos?
I enjoy watching them after they're done. Yeah, for sure. Oh. I just don't like recording them. It's just so much weight. And then you have to be 100%, 110 preferably if you have it, for 20 minutes. And then you're just waiting again until they need you for another shot. And it so does not fit my my concentration, my psyche to be like that. So, and I it's just boring, and the result, like I said, is fun to watch and it's cool to have it, but it's I just don't like doing it anymore.
That makes sense. Yeah, the definitely the video process can be very, very tedious, getting the right shot. Yes. And makeup, of course. I know you probably have to deal with hair and makeup.
Not my favorite part of it either. You're right. The makeup stuff.
Of course. Okay. So you guys have played all over the world. You know, you tour it feels like you guys tour all the time. Maybe that's just like an outsider looking in, but I feel like you guys are always on tour.
It's been a lot. The tour for the last album was the most shows that we've done for any album, as far as I know. So yeah, it's been a lot the last couple of years.
Great. So when you're on these tours, do you have a favorite venue? Like, do you have a favorite place that you always love to play when you go on tour?
Not really. Like, that's not favorite, but it's fun. Some venues in Germany we played, I don't know how many times, every time we go to this city, and that's on every tour, we play in this venue. Mm-hmm. So it feels like coming home in a little way, in a lot of ways. I don't know. It really, the venue doesn't matter so much. What I don't like is if it's the ceiling is low. Some places, the ceiling above the stage is only 2.5 meters or something, and I think that's not big enough. I like it when it looks bigger, because we can't use the big backdrop and stuff if it's so small. You have to be careful with your guitar so you don't, slam it into the ceiling and stuff.
Of course.
So, yeah, we're quite tall band, actually. That doesn't help a lot. But there's one, in the U.S., we have played at the Grove in Anaheim twice, on the last two tours. And that's a really nice venue. I like that a lot. Everything about that venue is very professional. I mean, I'm not saying anything about the other places we play, because, to be honest, the playing in the U.S. nowadays, or in North America nowadays, is so much better than it was 10 or 20 years ago. It's gotten a lot better for bands. The venues care about the bands now. They didn't do that before. It didn't get that feeling at all. It's actually been a pleasure to play anywhere. I don't want anybody to feel left out because mentioned one, this is the truth. The first couple of tours we did, you didn't get the feeling that the venue owners or the people who ran them, it didn't matter to them if you were there or not, and they didn't really put put their best foot forward, so to speak, to make us feel comfortable, which is what people are doing nowadays. So it's been a huge change on that part.
Yeah, I could see that being the case. Actually, the first time I ever saw you live was at Jack's in Springfield, Virginia, which is outside, Washington. Yeah. And of course, Jack's didn't even have a backstage. They didn't have a green room or anything.
Right.
So I remember a lot of musicians coming by and being like, "What is this place?"
That was traditional. The first show on the tour, we always started at the Jack's. That was actually a nice venue. We have good memories from playing there. Just like you said, not even in dressing room for the headliner. You had to change in the bus and then walk right on stage. Having a whole tour like that, it puts a kind of a stress on you. It's not very comfortable to do it that way.
They loved there.
For sure. It was, like I said, the shows in themselves were really good, and we always got treated well there too, so that was never a question. just if you're on the road for 5 or 6 weeks, all these things matter.
Of course. All right. Well, I've got one last question for you. Mm-hmm. So you've been doing this for how many years?
If you were talking like professionally and actually making a living off of it, it's 22 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. What about not making a living off of it?
Well, then we were just playing in other bands and stuff. Then you have to add maybe another 10 years.
All right. So let's say you've been doing this for over 30 years.
Yeah, more or less. But we're not with Hammerfall, obviously. You know, Hammerfall.
Of course.
But I've been playing music and rehearsing in a band and wanting to make it, so to speak,
right.
for since the late 80s, I guess you would say.
Well, that's important because, like, that's a lifetime. And now you've got new musicians, you've got an entire new generation that's seeing Hammerfall, and they want to do what you do, you know? So that's important that you let them know, like, you know, hey, I didn't start off the way we are now.
Sure.
You have to work your way there. So do you have any advice for anybody who wants to get started, who wants to look completely fresh? What advice would you give them?
Two advice, and this goes two pieces of advice for everybody. The first one is for anybody, whatever it is, doesn't have to be playing in a band. Put in the time. That's mm-hmm. you need to practice. You need to master whatever craft it is, because nobody's gonna give you things for free or hand it to you. You know, you need to know what you're doing. And the second one is for more aimed at the bands or people who want to play music or sing or whatever it is, to write the songs or play the type of music that you love, that you want to play, not the type of music that you think other people will like or that you think may get you to fame or whatever. Play the music that you have in your heart, because even if you don't succeed, at least you had a fun time doing it. That's the best advice I can give.
That is the most beautiful advice. I definitely take that to heart. So thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Okay.
Well, no worries.
That is all the questions I have for you. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell your fans about this new album that you have coming out?
Well, it's coming out in a couple of weeks, August 16th. And from our point of view, this is the strongest album that we've done, not to say anything about the other albums, but we really feel we hit a home run with this one. So I hope people like it. And regardless of whether you like it or not, or just think it's another Hammerfall album, come see us on the show. The tour that we do with Sabaton in October and November, because that's going to be an amazing time for everybody who's there and for us as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much for talking to me. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
And I hope you enjoy your time in Siberia.
Yeah, we're going to do a show on
That's
Saturday.
That's great. I'm glad it's just a show.
Yeah, I'm not going to the gulag or anything.
Awesome. Well, you have a great day, okay?
Yeah, thank you. You too.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Stone, they paved a solid one way to glory and roll from the
You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.